Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer. At Firehouse Subs, enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9. The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Welcome in. It is a Atlanta Soccer Tonight special here on 92.9 The Game and Off the Woodwork. I'm Jason Longshore and joined by Garth Lagerwey, President and CEO of Atlanta United. We're hoping we'll be joined by Dimitrios Evstathiou, the Senior Vice President of Strategy, to get a little more detailed in some of our topics today. But to kind of start things off, Garth, the transfer window's closed. It's going to reopen in the offseason. The window is still open to sign free agents for a few more weeks. That's why that international spot being added, just in case the right option becomes available, is important. We've seen Alexi Moranchuk now. He made his debut in Los Angeles on Saturday. Rob Valentino's the interim manager. He's working to get this team into the playoffs. There's 8 more games in the regular season. That starts Saturday night in Charlotte. We'll have the broadcast on 92.9 The Game, of course. And the managerial situation for 2025 and those additional designated player spots are open, and that stuff's going to be decided at a later date. Is that an accurate recap of kind of where we are at this stage?
Yeah. Look, I think we've just signed a contract, a search firm to help us with the coaching search. Now we're rolling up our sleeves, and Rob Valentino will be a candidate, and we'll be looking at some other folks. And again, just want to get that rolling now, where potentially we have candidates identified and a process underway. And as you said, now here we are for the stretch run of the season, and really focus on trying to make the playoffs with this group, and then hopefully getting even better next year when we talk about signing one or two more DPs and potentially even more if you look at some of those U22 spots.
Yeah, I mean, having that kind of process rolling is important because this offseason, even though it feels like it's long, and we've talked about it in years around MLS, like it's a long offseason. It's not a long offseason, not when you have those kinds of moves lurking.
It is. And like, look, you know, working as we do for AMBSC, I mean, you can compare it to the Falcons inevitably. And, you know, the Falcons are you know, setting aside their camps, and they have regular camps in the offseason, the draft, and you know the NFL is the master of having a year-round calendar, so to speak, of events we all want to tune into. You know, but the reality is that the players are off for you know more than 4 months. So when you look at it that way, you know, you're talking about 6 weeks usually for our guys, maybe 2 months at the outside. And again, as the team hopefully improves over time, then that window is even more and more constricted. Yeah. So to some degree, you want to take advantage of the rest while you have it.
So we've talked about this on our pregame chats, and we've kind of left things pushed off for this conversation because it's complicated. The MLS rules, the new changes in terms of rosters and how people can be classified and GAM and TAM, and like it's all confusing. I'd like to try as much as possible to focus on the changes that have been made recently and how that can affect Atlanta United going into this offseason. That, look, it's going to be a busy one, right?
100%. It does, and I think the rule changes for our audience are, you know, the ability to choose to have two DPs or three DPs, and there used to be a link between if you had three, then you had a reduction in the U22s you could have,
right.
And nowadays you can choose, you know, to have three and three if you like, but if you choose the two, then you get some GAM, which allows you to build across your whole roster. So I think, Jason, that, you know, just to set the stage, the general idea is, you know, if you're in a situation where you don't have three DPs up and running, then you have some more flexibility to spend. And some of that money, even, we have the ability to push forward into 2025. So we're in this window, to be specific. We signed Moranchuk, and we pursue a number of other guys. As we talked about on the show in pregame, almost only matters and close only matters in horseshoes and hand grenades.
Yeah.
And, you know, so weren't able to get the second one. But the upside of that is the $53 million in transfers that we got, it's not going anywhere. It will be spent. We spent more money than any other MLS team in the summer window. I don't want to lose sight of things like facts. Mm-hmm. That is a fact. And I think we'll probably be the highest spender in the winter window as well. So we're looking forward to that. We're already gearing up for, you know, who we think we can do that with. But that caused us then to make this 2DP election for the rest of this season. And now next year, ahead of next season, we can make a different election if we so chose.
Yeah, I think that's really important before we bring Demetrios into this is the decision to have three designated players versus two. The reason why that discussion is happening right now, that it's only two and the different number of U22s, is purely down to not getting the third designated player in this window, right?
That's correct.
And it does help you going into next year to make that designation the way that you did.
Yes, yes. And specifically, by not signing that DP in this window, it allows us to take money and roll it forward into 2025. And for that, this might be the perfect segue to kick it over to Demetrios, our capologist, just to walk us through how exactly that works, Demetrios, because I think we have potentially another spending mechanism to announce to our audience, if that's
another mechanism. Wow.
You teed it up just perfectly for me. So, sorry I was late, first off. And so, yeah, I'm not sure what I missed from your conversation earlier.
You've been around me enough, a whole lot.
So, listen, there is it's not an initiative, it's just additional flexibility that the league has created. So, I heard you talk about two versus three DPs. Mm-hmm. I actually would encourage you to think of it as there's six discretionary slots. And it's, are those six three DPs and three U22 players? Or is it two DPs and four U22 players? And in exchange for that decision to not spend what I think historically you can see, if you have three DPs, that those teams that have three DPs are spending a pretty good chunk more of out-of-pocket dollars outside of the salary budget on those three players than clubs with two DPs. So what the league is trying to encourage is, hey, we get some clubs don't want to do that full three DP model, and they don't want to put a significant amount of resources out of pocket into three slots. They would like some flexibility to maybe spend a lower amount, but across the rest of the senior roster.
Right.
And that's the mechanism the league has created now. So they're calling it loosely the 3DP model or the U22 model, investment model. I'm putting bunny ears on that for the radio folk.
Yes.
So, and the idea of choosing for the U22 model is they've created a new source of money. And it's not TAM, it's not DTAM, it's not GAM, but it's DGAM.
Discretionary GAM?
Yeah, or DGAM, depending on how you want to pronounce it. I'm kidding about that. But yes, it's discretionary GAM. And the, okay, the reason why the league is using that phrase is because the parameters around how you use it, the timing of how you use it is very similar to how discretionary TAM used to work, which was, hey, if you're going to use DTAM, it has to be that the given season you choose to use it.
Right.
So that that choice, if you choose the 2DP and 4U22 model, you get next year $2 million of DGAM that has to be used in that season. Now, okay, the key distinction, if I was wearing my league hat, would be, hey, this is actually an evolution from where TAM was, because we are now saying, hey, you can, it's your choice, club. If you want to have this DGAM, you have 2 million of it and you could spend it anywhere on the roster. So it, it doesn't have to be a TAM quality player. It doesn't, it's treated no differently than any other general allocation money with a earlier expiration date.
Okay.
So the idea is you have flexibility to increase your spending on a variety of players as opposed to concentrating it into the six slots, discretionary slots.
Indeed. For the audience, then, we have now GAM and DGAM. Are there any other means of spending on a team's roster?
Yes, TAM still.
TAM is still
TAM,
there.
And TAM is still discretionary.
Okay.
And that amount is used on a per annum basis as well. But that's that amount decreased.
CBA, right?
Yeah, that is codified in the CBA.
Okay.
And the there is an inverse relationship between the amount of GAM a club gets and the amount of TAM that is available to the club over the remaining term of the existing CBA. Think of it as they're trying to reduce the TAM.
That's right.
And yeah, then increase that. GAM, again, for flexibility, because the whole issue with TAM money was it has to be within a very certain kind of bandwidth of player when you're looking at their compensation and acquisition costs all in, right? And averaging out approximately $1.7
million.
Yeah. And as I say, can you give us a sense now of how much you know, the amount of the cap is a matter of public record. It's in the neighborhood of $5 million, I believe.
I think it's $5 million+ next year. So,
can you give our audience a sense of when you add up the TAM per the CBA, when you add up the DGAM by having made this election, what does that do in terms of a monetary impact on the roster?
Right.
Is that a 50% increase in?
That's a very good question. So don't quote me on it. I have to pull out the numbers.
Yeah.
But say with the assuming the average GAM allocation, right? Ignore where you're positioned in the season, whether you qualified for certain competitions or not, but the average amount plus assuming you spend all of the TAM available, you'll be around $8 million, $8 to $9 million.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Million on your salary budget, all in.
Okay.
Right? So now then there's this conversation of, are you having three DPs or are you going to do this U22 model, which would give you an additional $2 million to spend across your roster. So the idea is, I mean, it's probably somewhere around like a 15% increase all in. And again, that assumes no conversion of sales, like a homegrown sale, right, like Caleb Wiley or whatever.
Which, right, we'll get into in a second,
so
for sure.
It assumes that you're just no transactions, right? Yeah. It's just what you start with, clean slate. So, you know, it's a meaningful increase in a club salary budget. And it's about what kind of model do you want to have on your pitch? Do you want to go for this 3DP model or do you want to spread that extra 15% across 18 to 20 slots on your senior roster?
And D, one last point of clarification then. The amount of DGAM based on the U22 model.
Yeah.
Are we awarded an amount for the 2024 season and then again, yeah, for the 2025 season, should we elect to?
Yes. So you had a mid-season kind of choice this year
because
the rule,
right?
Yeah, because the rule came into place, okay, during the secondary window. So for us, choosing that model for the remainder of the season gives us not $2 million but $1 million of,
makes sense,
DGAM.
DGAM. That's going to stick, by the way.
I think so.
I think that's going to stick. So you mentioned Caleb Wiley. We know that that transfer has gone through, and we talked about it in our pregames over that period of time, Garth. That rule change, upping the amount of GAM that can be converted from a sale, is really beneficial for Atlanta United because of the timing. Because now that Caleb Wiley transfer can result in, instead of $1 million in GAM, $3 million in GAM, and that can be carried forward to next year's roster, right? Is that the right way to put it?
Yep.
Okay.
It'll by having that amount of GAM that's convertible, it does two things. It encourages investment in player development, specifically in the academies, right? Mm-hmm. Because we get to keep 100%, I think there's 95% of the transfer revenue from those players. And likewise, it incentivizes, you know, potentially without overcomplicating it, we now could take a player like Bartosz Szlies, who we spent $3 million, a little bit more, for, and we can take the Caleb Wiley sale and use those proceeds to offset all of, or almost all of, Szlies's transfer fee, which then in turn opens up another DP spot. So right, when we were looking at this summer, we could only sign 2 DPs in this last window, but by going into 2025 and applying Caleb's proceeds as described against Lisa's acquisition cost, now we actually have 2 full DP spots that we can deploy for the 2025 season.
So we know at this point, with the DGAM election of $1 million coming in and that $3 million coming in, that in addition to 2 designated player spots now, and part of the Wiley one will go into that, that gives you some flexibility going into 25 that maybe at the beginning of 24 you didn't think you'd have, right?
Yeah, I think, do you want to take that and take those details?
Well, I mean, so yes, and as Garth was saying about the ability to convert Sleash with that additional money, that leaves us with ostensibly three max TAM players, which in addition to the three DP slots for next season, which is I don't believe has happened in any other roster. I'd have to like really do a deep dive on that, but it's near impossible to be able to do that without some injection like the $3 million in GAM,
the transfer
from the transfer,
right,
and or this this additional rule,
okay,
right,
for
the U22's policy, right?
Yeah, and again, we have Sosa and Ibarra coming off loan, so in theory, there's two of those U22 spots that open up, so that's additional flexibility. And look, in terms of the use, I know your audience is interested, like, how does this all work? Most often, I think you're going to see the proceeds, if you take $3 million of proceeds from a sale, you're going to see them applied against the acquisition costs, mm-hmm, because otherwise, you can imagine, you spend $3 million on salary.
Right.
Now, the next year, you don't have that $3 million. Now, you're back in a corner, and you have to sell a player to make it up again.
Right.
So, to be clear, we're being very responsible with this. We're offsetting a one-time cost. That, to Dee's point, then, you know, those three players then are Saba and Gregerson and Sleash. And so, you have those three, you know, what I've colloquially described as DP lights or small DPs,
yep,
with big DPs, plus U22 DPs, and now you're talking about a scenario too where you just look at the number of spots on the field. You know, if six are covered by DP level players, and potentially you have, you know, we look at those U22 spots as key depth. Mm-hmm. I think it's misleading to describe them as starters. Right. They could be starters. We hope they become that, but a lot of times when they're starting out, in particular, they're going to be key reserves. Let's call them. But it does fundamentally, you know, we get sucked in constantly into, you know, is MLS getting better? Well, I think if we're fielding a team with 60 P's next year, potentially we are getting better.
Yeah, it's the evolution from that TAM era where the rosters got better in the middle, or in the middle of the starting lineup, maybe to be specific. But now you're creating mechanisms in the league to do this. The other thing I wanted to ask you guys, and you've mentioned the Sleash and Gregerson and Saba acquisitions, and I didn't know this was possible, and I don't know if it changed to make it possible. The way that you two structured the acquisition costs and staggered them, that was something
that... That was deliberate.
What's that?
It was deliberate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't know that you could do that. And in the past, I think when we had talked about when you go out and bring somebody in, that acquisition cost would hit straight away. And it feels like the messaging I've always heard has been all over the place in that. Is that a change to give you that ability to bring Sleash in, but push his acquisition cost back to 25, for example?
Yeah, well, that was a strategy we built out before these new rule changes occurred.
Okay.
So the strategy was around rotating that third designated player.
Exactly.
So we had Saba, Gregerson, Sleash. That was going to be the idea over 3 years.
And it was, you brought in Saba and the acquisition cost hit up front.
Right.
And then that's done.
And then Stien.
Then Stien's, and then that's done.
Right.
And then Bartek, and then and that's done.
Yeah, correct.
The acquisition cost part of it is done.
Right.
Okay.
And listen, I want to be clear. That's not an easy thing to do because you're basically, particularly for the players, you're pushing the acquisition cost down the road. You're telling a club, hey, wait on the millions for over 12 months. And not many clubs will do that.
Right.
And so that takes some negotiating. You know, if I could go back, because I was just thinking about the impact of the new rule and kind of, you know, Garth had mentioned with an amount of money, like whether it's $3 million that you convert from a homegrown transfer or this $2 million in the U22 model, that it's a large amount. You'll see clubs taking that, putting it towards acquisition costs. I think Garth is right I would like to make a prediction, although I won't put money down on it, right? Just this moment, that what you'll see is trade values within the league for really key strategic players that are already within the league, right? Mm-hmm. Whether they're, and particularly if they're domestic, I think you'll see the trade price go up next year.
Okay.
And despite the fact that it's DeGom, not Tam, and you could spread it across the entire roster, my gut is you're going to see the TAM quality players increase by one player kind of on average across the league. That's my gut. Okay. Is what you'll see. You won't see as many clubs spreading out that $2 million across the entire roster.
You'll put it into an impact kind of player as opposed to player 7 through 14.
That's my gut, and that's because and I'll just be blunt. We've been trained to think that way and how our roster construction is over the last, since 2018.
And, yeah, yes, but
yeah.
I think there's also when we put 6 DPs in,
yeah,
I think that does create a structure within Atlanta United where we have more flexibility to spend down roster in terms of some of the what's left over, so
agreed,
to speak, is, you know, we are top heavy, mm-hmm, on the surface.
Right.
But you know, we then have 5 spots to potentially use to allocate, or 5, or you know, go to count key reserves in that now, because to Demetrius's point, we have more flexibility where we don't have to spend it on one player. Yeah. I don't disagree with this conclusion that you'll find some teams that will,
yeah,
but they will in part because they haven't been able to fill 6 DP spots.
Exactly.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
So having staggered those things before the rule change, then again, Demetrius is being modest here because he's the one, not only is our capologist, he does all our contracts, so he's the one who came up with the structure.
I've never heard of creating that kind of structure to do it that way. I've never heard of it in league history.
Yep, and it's novel and innovative, and that's why Demetrius is here, and a big reason why I wanted him on the podcast here with you, so folks understand where some of the big brain power comes from. We'll get Arjun on the next one, and then you can really IQ.
That'll be fun.
You need Arjun.
Yeah, I do want this to be kind of a loose series in terms of how these things work. Because, look, I've talked to both of you guys about this in the past. It's hard to explain what's coming up in this winter window for fans. It's not like the NFL. It's not like the NBA, even, and their cap's confusing. But it's a little, I don't know if it's just out there more. And you can explain it, even if you want to dig into it, you can. Like, you can get into how much room you have in that cap to bring in a player. So then you can talk about what players.
Yeah, but that's just the cap, right?
Yeah.
You talked about the transfer windows and the dynamics.
Haven't gotten there yet.
I mean, that's... we just spent a big chunk of time talking about what's within the league's, mm-hmm, control, right? Which, loosely speaking, because it takes the PA agreement with the PA and a collective bargaining agreement to
get
there.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah,
but
that's important.
Right, but... these are the salary budget mechanisms are largely within the management discretion of the league.
Right.
So, but when it comes to our calendar and the transfer windows, that is not within the control, mm-hmm, of the league, meaning determining when we can set our transfer windows. That is something that the federations do, and they do it in conjunction with rules set out by FIFA. Mm-hmm. And it's not just our league. It's not just our country, actually. It's also Canada.
Right.
Right? Because we have 3 clubs in Canada,
yeah,
and their windows need to...
And they
to
moved theirs up this summer,
they
which
did,
was fascinating.
Yeah. As a result of you know, and they had to reach an agreement between not just our clubs and MLS, but there's a whole other league,
yep,
in Canada that has a different calendar. And so trying to find a happy medium about what works for their constituents, I mean, it shouldn't come as a surprise. It's not perfectly aligned with what the constituents in the U.S. have, which is actually not, again, not just MLS. It's also USL and the whole chain below USL,
yeah,
right? So,
when you get into transfer windows, I know a lot of people have talked about it here with this window. Chris Albright's talked about it publicly. Zoran Corneta's talked about it publicly. The 2-week gap this year, and I know other years sometimes it's less than that, sometimes it's a little bit more, but that gap between the MLS window closing and the European window closing, it hurt MLS at times. Albright talked about it, Corneta talked about it. I'm assuming it had a factor in terms of Atlanta going out and looking for designated players because there's 2 more weeks of business in Europe to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, look, in simple terms, the European clubs don't need to take our offer because they have 2 more weeks to take whatever offer they see fit. And look, they're in the same boat, you know, in the sense of they want to try to plan their team ahead of time as well. And
so 100%.
If they have an outgoing, they need an incoming, and you know, certainly the European market is the biggest market, and that timing dictates when things happen. And look, we have the reverse of this in the winter, right? Because the Europeans go first.
Right.
They close January 31st, and then we have February 1 on, where us and China and I think maybe Turkey are open for a little bit in the Scandinavian countries. Yeah. So it's just it's a matter of it does make for some – and to be clear, like everyone's aware of this issue.
Yeah.
Our window was shoved back a week later this year than it was last year in an effort to try to close some of the gap. But the issue is just that there is either a gap or there is not. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that you look at maybe big picture long term, you know, is do you try to realign with a European calendar? Because if you do that, now you can line up the transfer windows because FIFA has restrictions. Indeed, you can maybe go into detail, but you know the primary window before your season, that has to be the longer window.
Right.
And then the in-season or the mid-season window has to be a shorter window. So we're confined as to we can't make it bigger in the summer such that we can accomplish it another way. So this larger macro issue of flipping to the European calendar then becomes a discussion, and I don't have a lot of wisdom as to will we or won't we, but that is one potential solve, albeit one that is for sure different, right? I mean, we've played this way for 29 years. I think we're 28 seasons.
28.
You know, but do we do something that's a little bit more out of the box that to look at and say, hey, you know, this is now as MLS evolves, and we are spending more money on our teams and players, and the quality's improving. And like the other dynamic we had in the summer window was every player that we were going in for, we were competing with big clubs in Europe for.
Right. Now,
I assure you that wasn't always the case in MLS, right?
No.
But now that we're, you know, honestly on an Arthur Blank-owned team where we have the resources, we're able to sell the players and have the money to go out and get kind of the best players in the world, you know, now the timing matters more, if that makes any sense, because now all of a sudden we're fishing in a larger pond, and there are bigger predators. So we got to have some different bait to try to keep fishing. So that's what prompts then the larger conversation about European calendar.
Before we get into that full larger conversation, one thing that reporting has been all over the place, and I'd love clarification if y'all have it. The four-week window in the summer, it has to be 4 weeks? It can't be six?
No. No. So,
because I've seen both reported.
Yeah. So think of it this way. There's a total of 16 weeks
that's
available
for
total across two transfer windows. The primary window, as Garth said, has to be the longer of the two.
Right.
And it has to start no later than the beginning of your season. So, and most clubs, because they want to transfer players in, most leagues, I should say, federations, because they want to transfer players in before the season starts, they front load that primary window. So there's a bunch of weeks before the season starts, and maybe there's a couple weeks coming in after the season begins.
Right.
But the secondary window, smaller, just has to occur sometime during the middle of the season.
Okay.
Now, the range that FIFA gives is the primary window is 8 to 12 weeks. And the secondary window is 4 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
But they can't be the same length,
Because primary
always has to be longer.
Right.
And a total can't be more than 16 weeks.
So it could be 10 and 6.
So it could, but here's the other thing that, you know, we as a league struggle with. Because as Garth said, a ton of people have thought about this. Very, very smart people.
Sure.
And there is a conundrum with our schedule, which is the more you back it into the end to match with the end of the most of the European countries' windows, you lose game time during the season, and you butt up against roster freeze, which is 2 weeks into September. And so you start closing deals on August 30th. August 31st, if that's when the window closes, there is a real chance that you will not be able to get the work visa and the ITC in time for roster freeze, which, by the way, after roster freeze, how many games are there? Six?
Yeah.
Six games left? So there's this kind of needle you're trying to thread.
Got it.
In that conversation around how long should the window be and what's the utility of it in the placement given our season.
Like, and the other one is for teams in the Champions League, you have to be able to sign players before the Champions Cup starts.
Right.
So that necessitates basically a February 1st date in terms of that. So now if you go to 10 weeks, let's say in your example, 10 and 6, now you're going February, March, part of April, which is a more constricted time frame.
Yeah, you don't go as long into the season.
Yeah, and maybe that makes sense, to be clear. But
and the other thing I'll say, they speak of it in weeks, but it's total. So it's like you can carve it up so it's days, right? Yeah. So I don't think it has to be whole 7 day weeks.
Gotcha.
It's all together. It's 7 times 16.
One more bit of clarification too on what you said, Demetrius. To be on the roster, you have to have your ITC, International Transfer Certificates between the federations and FIFA, but you have to have your work visa to actually be on the roster. Yeah,
you must be legally able to work within the United States. So okay. That means whether you're a U.S. citizen, green card holder, or you have a work visa.
So if you sign, if you back it up to the 31st, for example, and you sign somebody, you get it done, you apply for the work visa, it's not done by roster freeze. Sorry, basically.
That player is not eligible for the rest of the season.
Okay, that's an important clarification. I think for some people, some people think once the deal is done, they're on the roster and then they can play once they get those things.
No. And I will add, most transfer agreements have conditions precedent and loan agreements that require work visas and the receipt of the ITC before they're actually effective.
Got it.
So the transfer technically isn't closed until those things happen.
Okay.
For us, that's our policy. Whenever we do deals, we always condition the transfers or loans on those types of things, because listen, I used to work at the league office. There was a lot of clubs that were left hanging dry, right? Like without any player, because something in that work visa process in receiving the ITC, they missed the timing of it. But that's not unique to MLS, by the way. That's a global thing, right? That happens. So,
okay. So big picture on calendar, since it's come up, how feasible now versus, I know when the league started, and if you go back through the history of soccer in this country, there's reasons why roughly we play the calendar that we do. How much do you think those reasons have changed, and how feasible do you think it would be to do a fall to spring kind of calendar?
Look, I mean, for Austin, Atlanta United, we have Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
We're a little lucky.
Yeah, it's the nicest soccer stadium in the world. And by investment, that's objectively true. And so we can play anytime. And, and our building is available, during those times. And so for us, it's great. It's an option. We should do what's best for the league. There are some logistical challenges with northern climates, the Chicagos, the Montreals, the Torontos, et cetera, whereby, those teams probably don't want to have a bunch of games in November, December, or January. Now, I think the thing to keep in mind is that the CBA mandates that the players receive 6 weeks off. So you have to put that in there somewhere, any way you cut it.
Okay.
And so you can take, I don't know that we actually have to play in that different a calendar, if any, because if you think about the playoffs run through November right now, their MLS Cup Finals consistently been the first week of December with a couple exceptions, but that's been the norm. So if you took that model and said, hey, the CBA mandated break is after what was MLS Cup. Maybe you play one more week, but the point is, you do that and then you come back and run a preseason in January and start in February after the Super Bowl. Because again, I don't think it makes sense for us to be competing with NFL playoffs and NFL Super Bowl. Right. Certainly in our building it doesn't. But basically, Jason, if you back up one more step and say, hey, as the league improves, we're not going to play on FIFA windows anymore. Because we say, hey, we're literally investing in more players that are playing in these tournaments, right?
100%.
And we saw this summer significant impacts on our team based on that. And like you can't say, well, we're not going to sign good players. That's illogical,
right?
And likely, likewise, if you say we're going to invest more in our teams and we're going to spend on better players, our fans are paying to watch those players play, mm-hmm. right? So we need to then, it almost forces the decision then to take FIFA dates off. And once you get into this calendar argument with the FIFA dates argument, you honestly are playing every weekend anyway, yeah. right? And so you can call that what you want to call that, whether whether that's a European calendar, whatever. Look, to what Demetrius' point was, is like, you can't, if you call it the European calendar, that means you can flip your windows so that you can have a longer window in the summer, and that makes more economic sense, then do it. But just for the audience, I don't think the footprint that we're playing in actually changes materially at all.
I understand. Yeah, right? It's like, just where you start and where the final is.
Yeah, exactly. Like this. So now the finals, because like, look, the other challenge we have is not only are you going into the heart of the college football season as we wind down, but we have international breaks in September and October and November.
Those are brutal, yeah.
Right? And if you literally played the same weekends, but you called it the European calendar,
right?
And now the final's in May, and right. now there's no breaks. Now we have a straight run-up March, April, May without any kind of yep. Interruption ahead of all the big summer tournaments where we're not losing our players. So I think that's important to say to the audience is, this is all, it's complicated in that there are multiple layers to this, but just take and say, hey, if you play the same number of games at roughly the same times, you just call it something different, there might be a more efficient way to organize this. Yeah. I think that's the simplest way to look right. at this.
Yeah, it's just moving game one to a different spot in the calendar and moving the last game to a different spot in the calendar. Yes. Before we finish up, like, we could keep going forever, and I'm not going to keep y'all's time any more than this, but I do want to get into that designated player conversation and the windows, and it kind of sets it up because you were shopping for a designated player in the summer window, our summer window. Now it's going to be two designated players you're shopping for in the winter window. What are the pros and cons between that kind of signing in those different windows for MLS?
Yeah, look, what I would say is, when in particular with a center forward, one fact, facts do matter. The last time Yoros Yakamakis scored a goal for us was March 31st. Yep. So we have had our reserve forwards have played at the same scoring rate that we had when Yoros on our team. So just that's just a fact. People can be mad or happy.
It's important.
That's a fact. So that was part of why we felt comfortable trying to get the best player available. Now, ultimately, we weren't able to sign that second one, but by giving ourselves that flexibility, we are going to go into this window, we're going to have the same flexibility, we have two spots, but we're going to sign the best player we possibly can. Because the one thing about these DP spots is, that $50 million might be burning a hole in your pocket, but you get to spend it once. And when it's gone, it's gone. So, you're not going to buy out a $14 million player. So, we have those two spots. And what I would say is the other factor, and Demetrius can speak to this more depth, but there were a limited number of transactions specifically for center forwards that we believe was influenced by the financial fair play stuff that's coming in, which, again, for the audience, Europe's basically instituting a salary cap similar to the U.S. It's not the same system. It's not the same mechanism.
Right.
But they're looking at revenues and saying you can't spend above what you generate.
UEFA sustainability rules, they call it now.
That's at the UEFA level. And I know different leagues are doing different things too. And in addition, sometimes alongside.
Like Spain has additional rules well that are actually tighter than the sustainability.
But the significance of this is because they came in, and this was for me, the first window they really came full force, right? If you think of the top and you look at points deducted from Everton, deducted from Nottingham Forest in the English Premier League, they're putting real teeth behind this. Manchester City is being investigated on 100 counts.
Right.
You saw real wariness in the market in terms of some of the level of transactions. Now, we're still got a week left, so we'll see how it closes. But what that actually argues for then, Jason, is in the winter, you might be more active. So as counterintuitive as that sounds,
markets
aren't going to stop. That's not what's going to happen. But they might reorder how they function. And so this was the thing about not throwing stupid money at something, right? Still sticking to our player valuations. In particular with forwards, for most teams, one forward can play at a time. So we've done all this work on forwards, and if none of them were available then, well, some of those guys, those same players, that were prohibitively expensive or were viewed as unmovable, are going to have a slightly worse 6 months, or the team is going to get a new coach, and so you might actually see more movement in that market in the winter. Now, I don't know that, but it seems a reasonable byproduct of if the summer is slower, then the winter's going to have to be more active, just because the market is not going to stop altogether. Do you have more detail?
Well, the what I will add also, and I think it's an important fact for us to just clarify that, to reinforce the market argument you were saying about how tough it was this market, this past window in the marketplace, is that our challenges were not with reaching a mutual agreement with the player.
That's an important distinction.
We, and all of our key targets, our top targets that we went really deep in and we're feeling good about, we're in a good place with the player in all those instances. And where ultimately we hit a real challenge was, what was the counterparty, the club, asking for? And there was that market, and you can see the stats. There's a lot of stats that have already come out before the windows even closed, showing for strikers within England like a 66% increase on pricing compared to what their valuation, their FMV is.
Right.
So, you know, that for us was an indication that, hey, there's something happening in the marketplace. And we don't control that, mm-hmm. right? Like, we have to recognize, like, there's only so much we have in our control. Now, to Garth's point about what's different in the summer market versus the winter market, is there's going to be fewer players playing in the sandbox, particularly with the type of investment we'd be looking for. The European market, with very few exceptions, are looking for strategic, incisive moves mid-season.
Yeah.
Right? Corrections or offloading because a player didn't pan out the way they wanted to. So we will have more flexibility and a little more room because of that to flex our muscles, right, mm-hmm. In that window. We can wait out until there's no other players in the marketplace, because we'll just sit and wait until January 31st passes. And then I'm not saying we would do that, but we're playing with everyone.
Yeah.
And then we have the ability to outlast any of the other players in Europe.
It flips the script from the summer, where you get up to your deadline and correct. The club can say, you know what, that sounds great, but we think we can get more in these next 2 weeks. We're going to wait. Nice talking to you.
Yeah.
Now that flips, because you guys will be able to go in after the European market is closed.
Yes.
And potentially take a good player off of somebody's hands that is surplus.
Yeah. And look, it, again, as always, it's even more complicated than that, because the other market we can buy from is Brazil.
Yeah.
Right? And for a long time, again, we couldn't afford players in Brazil.
Yeah, that's changed a lot.
Increasingly changed, right? And so we can go get some of the best players in Brazil. That market's going to go in December, because they're on the same calendar as MLS's.
Right.
So, again, because we have the two spots open, the silver lining of signing one in the summer is that flexibility is really important now, because now we can target a group of players in that first window, November, December, right? But then, again, if we don't, like, hopefully we get one in there, then we can still come back and go for a second one in February. As we try to ramp up the group going forward. So it is multiple bites at the apples, the way I would describe it. And then again, if something doesn't fall our way, you still have the summer if it comes to that. That's not our choice, but that's how we look at it strategically.
There's so much, and I'm sure people listening to this, their heads are spinning right now, steam coming out of the ears. But thanks to both of you for having this conversation, because one, we don't get to have this conversation very often from a media standpoint, and hopefully the fans appreciate that there's not many clubs who are doing this sort of thing. The transparency that you guys are showing is massive, and to have this level of conversation about strategy coming up, I hope it gives the fans out there a little bit better understanding about what's coming over these next few months.
Yeah, look, Demetrius knows, going back to when he worked at the league office, I mean, it's a crusade of mine to try to get more and more of this information available online as well. I mean, when we did our roster release, we disclosed more information than any MLS team ever had up to date, right? And we still are restricted from disclosing some of the salary information for CBA reasons. And again, that's above my pay grade. But I do think that there is a real movement within the league now to say, hey, the way we're going to get people to follow our league, particularly general sports fans who are used to salary caps and contracts and websites that track all this, is to get people engaged on an individual level, where hopefully you know, Demetrius and I have the jobs where very few people have done them, but everyone assumes they can do them better than we can. And I mean that sincerely, because like if you
play football manager, come on.
Yeah, well, but like if you go back to the source of like sabermetrics and baseball and yeah. this, a lot of that stuff was crowdsourced. It yeah. was they put all the numbers out there, and then some smart people were like, "Hey, you idiot, what about this?" And like. We welcome those comments. Like there is no monolithic, like, we are the smartest guys in the room. To the contrary, we feel like the transparency helps us, mm-hmm. where if folks, you know, examine this as much as we can and we're able to disclose more and more, hopefully that is a mutually reinforcing relationship where now our audience is more engaged. Hopefully now, you know, again, if we miss something, we're able to be more efficient. And, like, look, as these rules changes come, you know, the first set of rule changes was in the middle of the summer. Jason, you and I were joking that we were a 3DP model until the last day of the transfer window, that we were a 2DP model.
Yeah.
But now your strategy changes because now you have mm-hmm. some more flexibility on the roster. So now it changes how you're going to build for next year. And again, it is objectively better than it would have been had we signed the guy in the summer. So,
right. So
you know, are we disappointed that we didn't get 2DPs? Of course we are. We got real close on a couple guys. But there's significant upside for us going into 2025 as we look forward and dare I say, Marenchik's come in. He's had his debut. He's going to play more and more and more. I think we're going to build our team around him, and we're going to move forward. And I think we have real opportunity now in the future to build a really great Atlanta United franchise going forward.
It's going to be a fun ride, these last eight games. It starts on Saturday in Charlotte. Our pregame coverage will start at 6:30. You'll be with us in Charlotte, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll be talking then. Thank you guys for your time so much.
Thank you.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.